This recording is a production of the Conservative Anabaptist Education Committee. This presentation was recorded at Conservative Anabaptist School Board Institute 2018, held in Harrisonburg, Virginia on March 2 and 3.
My name is Jonathan Miller, and I come to this workshop not as an IT person. That is not my vocation. I learn as much as I need to do what I need to do with the technology that I think is useful for me. And other than that, I'm not the kind that I'm not a resource person, for example, in our community for technology. But I am involved in a couple schools, and I'm a school board chairman for our school just south of here in Sturgis Draft. And of course, we have these discussions about technology, as I'm sure you do, and that's one of the reasons why you're here. I also teach at Calvary Christian Academy, which is local here, and so I'll just bring some experience and perspective from those two places. And as you saw on the description, this is a discussion forum. So what I intend to do is talk about kind of our approach to various aspects of technology in the places that I've been, that I've had experience, and then simply have you give you the opportunity to talk about what you're doing, maybe ask questions, and kind of just work down through the handout that I have and just have an opportunity for us to talk together about what's working, what's not working, what are our areas of concern, what are some things that we'd like to see changed, just those kinds of things. So you can be thinking about anything that you'd like to bring up as we go along. Now, I have a question for you to begin with. I'm curious how many schools we have represented here. So if you are in this group and you know that you are representing your school, could I just have your hand up just to get a rough idea of how broad a group we are representing? Okay, so I'm going to guess that's at least 25, maybe, I don't know. So we're representing a number of schools here. All right. So this discussion, you know, is one of the prominent issues, I believe, one of the prominent issues facing our churches today. It's not just our churches, our culture is thinking seriously about the effects of technology and some of the ways that it is impacting the current generation in a negative way. So this discussion actually is not unique to Mennonite or conservative circles. There are people in the wider culture who are calling into question some of the uses of technology and asking, are we doing the right thing by just sort of throwing open the doors and saying, let's take it and use it? So we're on this discussion because it is a need. It's something that we do need to pay attention to. So I'd like to just jump right into our outline here. Cell phones, technology has changed so rapidly here. I remember being in my early 20s, which I'm realizing is further back than what it, it's becoming longer all the time here. But the youth in our area began bringing cell phones to youth activities. And to us who were a little older, we just thought that was the most absurd thing. You know, why did you have to bring a phone? There was a phone in the building to call home whenever you needed it. But technology has continued to evolve, and we've used it. We find uses for it, and in many cases, it's very helpful. So, while when I first started teaching, I'd have never dreamt that I would have students bringing phones to school. Obviously, it's a reality today, and in fact, many parents are wanting their children to have phones with them in the possession, just because they like to have the connection with their children. So phones at school does bring up some potential problems. At Pilgrim, we ask the students to leave their phones in the car They may bring them to school if they have phones and their parents want to send them with them, but then they leave them in the car and come into the building without their phone. At Calvary, have a similar policy. Basically, they can bring them into the office, and there's a particular slot in the office where they put the phone. It's got to be turned off, or it'll bug the secretary to death. Actually, she'll get that taken care of. But they put it in the slot, and then they can get that again when they dismiss at the end of the day. We have not... It's not been a problem for students to be standing around using their phones after school, you know, before they leave home, leave for home. But I could see that being a potential problem that a school administration just needs to address. That, you know, when you get your phone, it's not to be used on the school premises. And that's pretty much the stance that is taken is, you know, you take the phone, use it once you are on the, not on the road home, but you're using it off the premises. Now, this becomes a little more complicated when there are things like school trips. So, for example, at Calvary, they do an extended field trip to, you know, it's an overnight type of thing. So what use should students be expecting for their cell phones? Many parents are wanting their children to be taking these things along and being able to call or communicate in some way over the course of the trip. So basically, the way we've approached that is we have a very frank conversation with the students saying that communication with parents is all that they are allowed to do. And so they shouldn't be seen with their phones out communicating or communicating with each other or looking at other things on their phones. That's worked relatively well. As a lot of these questions, it takes a good bit of monitoring by the adult supervisors in the group in whatever policy that you decide will work for you or whatever policy that you're comfortable with. I found that it takes communication, clear communication with students. It takes a relationship with them so that they're, you know, if they're by and large respecting the positions that the school takes, then you find a cooperation with them. So I think that's important. But it does sort of open up the variables a little bit and make it a little more difficult to help the parents be satisfied and also maintain some level of accountability. We ask that no laptops, tablets, MP3 players, cameras, any other digital media come into school without special permission. So that is the position at both Calvary and at Pilgrim. So I'm curious, let's just take a little break right there and hear from y'all. What are your questions or what are your positions at your school? Just to kind of help us maybe have good ideas for how to interact with this. Maybe there are challenges that you face and you're not sure how to interact with that, and you would like some input from this group. Any questions or comments? Maybe a couple of you just want to share what you do. This is the time to do that. Just share what your policy is. Yes?
We pretty much have zero electronic stuff at school. Mm-hmm. Not to say something doesn't fall out of a backpack every once in a while and get confiscated, but as a policy, not even cell phones.
Okay.
Not even
so no cell phones and any other electronic media. Good. Mm-hmm.
I have a little bit of a question with that then. So this is assuming that, and right up front, I'm not a board member, I'm a teacher, so I'm going to have a slightly different perspective. This takes a certain amount of trust in your high school specifically saying, okay, we're going to be up front with you. With our policy, we expect you to be up front with us. Well, what if there's underhandedness going on then with them sneaking them in through, you know, to their backpacks? And to further complicate matters then, you know, what position do you take on that? You know, should teachers be checking for that? You said it takes quite a bit of involvement from a staff standpoint. Just how do you proceed with that, especially in that case? We don't usually have a problem with it during school, but break times, you know, they'll sneak them outside or something like that and be texting their friends.
Yeah. So, and like I said, they're supposed to be in the office. They're not supposed to be in the backpacks. Yeah, they are confiscated.
Okay.
If they are not following the expectations, they're confiscated. And then, you know, there's as much disciplinary action as is needed. Hopefully less rather than more, you know, as always. But whenever there's underhanded approach or an attitude that's not cooperative, obviously it's showing up on multiple fronts, technology just being one of them. And we all know those challenges of dealing with that. Yes?
Just the way we do it at our school is similar to, I think, what you said, Calgary, where they get the self as the teacher and the family at the end of the day. But I have a question just more in general, having to do with how to arrive at policies as a school. Is it a common perspective, procedure that a school typically has more of a strict policy on, let's say, technology? In other words, to satisfy the more strict among the group, there's always going to be variation.
Yeah.
You go from the middle of the road, and therefore possibly a family approximately half the people, or do you try to go way toward the strict end so that you offend as few people as possible? And where do you arrive at that policy?
Yeah, the question of making policy, go ahead.
I would say school has a very specific reason you're not here. I mean, there's a very specific reason why you're here, which does not include texting. You're here to learn, but we have a very specific, and that's, I don't care what you do at home, I don't care what your, I do care what you do at home, okay? But that's slightly irrelevant to the purpose of why we're here at school.
Yeah, so the point being that we can have a policy that's specific to an educational institution, and we don't need to be apologetic for that. Yes. Comment.
Interesting that Steve Jobs, the Zuckerberg, and those guys, they invented these things, and they do not allow their children to have these toys.
Yeah.
Because they realize the danger of them. We've got a public school teacher in our area, and she has grandchildren attending a private school out in Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
And in that school, they have no computers.
Okay.
The children learn the old-fashioned way, and there's time enough to learn how to run a computer.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you know, I think a couple things you're bringing up. One is that the culture at large is beginning to see, with the research that is now available because of the time that we have with the advent of the iPhone and other advancements, they're seeing some of the negative aspects of the technology boom that we've seen recently. The other thing we heard just a moment ago, a computer doesn't make an artist, right? A computer doesn't make a lot of things. And I think we do our students a favor by pointing out some of those things. Like, for example, lesson prep is easier in many ways because of technology. And we're not rolling off those carbon copies or whatever. Actually, I'm not dated that much. But we have these technologies, but think about lesson prep. What has not changed about lesson prep? Well, there's a lot that has not changed. It's just a plain hard work, you know? Okay, so good point. Yes?
So for those of you that have technology policies in place, is it I've been on our school board for a year and a half, maybe close to, and as far as I know, the board doesn't have a formal policy on it. I think maybe the principal and high school teacher affected something. Is that something that commonly should be done by the board? Is it important that there's a formal document about it? If there's particularly if what's implemented in practice is working, is it valuable for the board to go through the exercise of formally documenting it?
Mm-hmm. Good. So, good question. Any comments for this question, Ellen?
Yes, I think the board should address it just for the main fact that teachers come and go. Hopefully yours don't. But so there's continuity in the policy.
Yes. So a governing body that's giving some direction to that. Janice, you had a comment.
There's also the larger parent body to think about. You want to right. make sure that what you're doing in the school is somehow you have the larger parent body, what their views right. are on technology, how they do and don't want it to be used. You can't be doing something that they can't support.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's true you can go the other way and say that for educational purposes, we're not going to have it in school, mm-hmm. and they use it at home. If it's the other way around, then you're going to have a problem. So the board is the board is going to be that, well, that liaison between the whole community and the teachers in school.
Mm-hmm. Right. That. I just want to come back. Could you repeat your question again over here, gentlemen?
In arriving at policy, for instance, about technology, do you take a middle-of-the-road approach, or do you go way more toward the strict end so as not to be offensive to the
right. Thank you for that. So I was thinking we kind of went around your question. I'm not sure if we gave you a direct answer to that. Jonas, your comment and your question here are, I think, getting to that. Does anybody have a specific comment about how you set policy on these things? Like, who do you consider? And I think we already mentioned parents. So, varied opinions about this. Any quick comments about who you would actually consider? Yes.
I think as the board, it's important to just look at the vision for the school in general,
mm-hmm.
and making sure that your parents have buy-in to that vision.
Mm-hmm.
And then as you're setting these policies, it's easy to tie that back to those things.
Mm-hmm.
If you're just coming with random policies at different times, buy-in is going to be very, very difficult.
Right.
Regardless of who it is, strict mm-hmm. or unstrict.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I appreciate that. I think that's a good, I think the starting point for us needs to be coming back to our vision, mission, the core values that we have as an organization. And if the group of parents or whoever the patrons are who are supporting this school, if they have sat down and hashed out these things, so they know what their school is about, they know the niche that their school provides in their community, and they know the values that they are holding to, then these policies always come out of that. They're never going to contradict. And that gives us kind of a foundation for which to create policy. So we'll come back to that a little bit later. A lot of these are kind of interrelated, so I expected we would sort of move across some of these lines as we move down through this outline. We've been talking specifically about phones. Is there anything else that you would like to share or a question you'd like to raise specifically about phone use in school? Yes, in the back.
I'll just give this example. I think you're right. Phone and internet and so on is a different category. But I don't think we need to be afraid to make a policy. Our public school in Hampshire County has a no cell phone policy.
Mm-hmm.
And they're doing it not because of content, they're just doing it because it's not good sense to have a cell phone in school.
Yeah.
And they may also be doing it for cheating purposes and all
right.
of that. So
that's integrity is an issue. Okay. Someone else had a comment? Okay, let's, one other item on cell phone use. What about teachers? So this is an employee issue. They are on the job. They have their phone. Have you, as boards, done any, set any policy in place in terms of teacher phone use? I will basically say, for at Calvary and at Pilgrim, there's not a hard policy about this, but it's the general expectation that teachers will be on task. And so any phone use would be either for school purposes, or it would not take away from instructional time or be a distraction in any way from instructional time for the students. So in practical terms, what that means for me, for example, I'm a teacher. So it means that I'm not going to be texting in the presence of my students. Now, if there's a text that I'm sending because I'm off class duty right at that moment, fine. But so it's not something that we look at really as a hardline stance, but general policy. So, but questions? Any questions or comments? Yes.
One thing that complicates that a bit, and we ran into this, was our high school teacher and principal owned other businesses.
Mm-hmm.
And his employees need to contact him. So mm-hmm. how do you deal with that? You've got somebody who has people who do legitimately need to get in touch with him during school hours when he is on duty.
Yeah.
How do you deal with that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well.
We had a comment back here.
Sorry?
No man can serve two men.
No man can have two jobs. any other comments about that? Go ahead.
I was bothering the teacher. Sometimes you just need to be available, and obviously with care.
Yeah, and you know, rewind the clock 20 years where we had the phone in the hall. You know, obviously that was where you communicated. Rewind 100 years, you know, it was the horse. Or was it 200 years? But anyway, the horse was galloping down the trail, you know. So there have been ways to get in touch with people. And obviously the ease with which that is done is, has increased. So I think one of the things the main thing we're concerned about is that it's not distracting from instructional time, and that technology remains our... It remains our tool, doesn't become our master.
Some of the technology itself. So who, or if I get incoming text or message some way, does it ding? Well, that's up to me, who mm-hmm. I'm allowed to ding for.
Mm-hmm.
Me, one of the things, if I'm in a meeting and anywhere, my wife's text,
mm-hmm.
it sounds, I get a notification. Otherwise, if you send me a text, I don't take it.
Okay, I'm sorry about that. All right. Yeah, so just noting that, you know, you can't control whose alerts are coming through. Yeah. Good. All right. Let's move on. So we're looking at computer use and actually looking at it without internet. It's kind of hard to imagine, actually. What do you use computers for in your school where it's not tied directly to the internet? I think there are still some uses. Some I thought of are, so you know, maybe some DVD training for elective courses if you don't have a teacher there to actually teach the class. Maybe some tutorials, some software like language software or something like that. How many of you use computers for typing or some kind of typing course? Okay. And we currently are using web-based typing tutorials. So I guess that's internet right there. But there are different options for that. Also, of course, word processing would be one option as well. You know, just having a lab or a computer for students to access during the day where they can actually type up assignments and that kind of thing. Are there any other uses for computers where internet is not necessarily needed? but you're using the computer for educational purposes.
Our high school students put the yearly school newsletter out.
Okay, yeah. So again, the word processing and maybe some graphic design or that kind of thing. All right. Okay, we have a computer class. Basically, they learn Office. So of course, we use computers for that as well. All right, what about teachers? I'm just thinking it may be helpful, or you may have questions about what technology teachers are using in schools. We have projectors, so teachers have access to PowerPoint, document cameras, that kind of thing, at both Pilgrim and Calvary. Video is used some. Generally, videos, well, they're different positions. At Calvary, video is viewed more favorably than at Pilgrim, where I'm on the board. But at both places, we would, you know, access video clips, some YouTube videos if it was instructive, let's say. Generally, it's not a lot. It's not a big part of the instruction. So let's maybe just take that whole section there. What questions, what feedback do you have for how teachers can use technology in their education? Yes?
If, as far as the non-internet computer use, if your teachers are still averaging their report cards by calculator and paper, find them some Excel spreadsheets and help them do their job faster.
Good point. How many of you are using a web-based grading system? Any of you using a web-based grading system? Okay.
How about computer-based?
Not right. Web. Okay. Yeah. So, that's a good question. So, computer-based, but not web. Okay. Great. How many of you have a spreadsheet or something like that that you're using? I'm sure if it's computer, then that's what it would be. Yeah. All right. Yeah, there are, we actually use web-based grading systems at both Pilgrim and Calvary. I really like it, actually, but it puts everything online and has a number of features. Most of the ones we use are simply having automatically generated reports that the parents can see and also that we can easily produce as a school. So that's kind of the benefit that we've seen. But questions? Any questions or comments?
Just yeah. Go ahead.
Can you tell us which ones you use?
At Calvary, we use GradeLink, which I think is a little pricier. Has a lot of features. One being it will actually produce transcripts, which I think was one of the reasons for moving that direction. For a small school, I think there are other options and. Frankly, I can't remember what we're using at Pilgrim.
ThinkWave,
thank you. That's what it is. ThinkWave. There are a number of options. It's a quick search will bring up a number of things. ThinkWave is what we settled on there. I think it met, I mean, it's the best. It was the best option economically. So. Yes?
This is kind of implicit in your outline, but I just wanted to make sure I'm understanding this right. You don't, your students don't have access to internet accessible computers?
Let's just go to that. We will get to that. Are there any other comments?
It is there.
That's fine. No, that's fine. Are there any other comments on how, what kind of technology that you're comfortable with, teachers using in school? Do you have concerns? Do you have questions about what they should use? Maybe you just want to share a little more about what you do in your school. Do we have any smart board users? Okay. I want to say this in thinking about teachers having technology. So the push in our schools, in the general culture today, is to continually be updating. So students are given tablets, you know, smart boards are used, etc. And one of the things that the more seasoned teachers have been frustrated with is that technology changes so quickly. They have to adapt, and they're spending their time learning new technologies rather than teaching their coursework. And so what you have is a very, very effective teacher who's well-seasoned, but is not hired because they're not adapting to the latest technology. You know, they may not be hired alongside of someone who's coming with much less experience, but they know the technology, they can run an iPhone, they can, you know, that kind of thing. So, again, technology does not make a teacher. And I think we're at a good place as a people if we recognize that and don't feel like we need to have all the technology in order to teach well. You can teach well without a projector and a PowerPoint, a flashy PowerPoint, an attractive PowerPoint. It's very, very nice, and it's effective. It appeals to our visual learners. But there are other ways to appeal to visual learners. And so I think if we don't have that technology available in our school, we shouldn't feel shorthanded. I want to kind of push against that sense there. Or maybe you have a comment on that.
I see a danger in learning being easy and fun. I mean, we said that you're supposed to make a classroom enjoyable.
Yeah.
But it is still hard work. And it's going to be harder to read a 600-page work, you know, book than it is to read or to watch some kind of video about it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And you're going to learn different facts, different amounts of facts mm-hmm. to reading that 600-page book.
Mm-hmm.
We use technology at school. I mean, that's just one sort of it. But I encourage my children to read books, too.
Yeah, definitely.
Are we losing that book, printed page concept? I'm not sure.
Any comments on that?
I think we are, to some extent, kind of like we lost the oral tradition when we got the printing press. Like, people used to be able to remember a phenomenal amount of information just that was passed down by oral tradition. As we brought on reading, we didn't need to commit it to memory anymore, and we adapted. I don't like the change that seems to be coming, but it seems like there's, unless we change course, there's a similar change coming, I think, in shifting from reading to more electronic, visually oriented information transferal.
Mm-hmm. Who was it? Socrates, who decried the advance of the alphabet, the Phoenician, I guess it was the Phoenician alphabet. He was afraid they would lose their ability to memorize. He was afraid they would lose their ability to memorize. And of course, the oral tradition was what he was referring to.
Right.
So that's just interesting. Yes.
And just a comment was made here. I think we need to keep in mind that we live in a day and age when everything is easy and quick and we can buy it now and all this.
Mm-hmm.
Life isn't that way.
Mm-hmm.
And to have that mentality or to promote the mentality that learning is fun and easy.
Mm-hmm.
No. Learning can be hard. Life is difficult. There are some hard times in life. Let's not lose that concept.
Yeah, so values like perseverance, hard work, integrity, yes. And of course, that's not saying that learning can't be fun. I mean, it certainly is fun to learn, to grow, to discover new things. So, all right. Let's move on then to internet. How many of you have internet access at your school? Okay. So we're coming, most of us are coming to this wondering how to manage the internet. That's probably the question that we keep batting around here. So at Pilgrim, we have basically a whitelisted approach. We have sites that are whitelisted or they are okayed. They will come through the filter. Anything else does not. So that versus a content filtering. Now, on occasion, we will open that up for students if they're doing a research project. All the computers in that particular case are out in the open. They're in the general classroom because it's a small school. So it's not like they're off in another room. And so we'll open it up for a period of time and let them do some research. But primarily, research is done at home. So most families in our church and our school basically serves the church. So it's not like it's representing multiple congregations. But mostly they will do work, research at home, and most of those families would have access to the internet. In fact, I think all of them would have access to the internet, and they would have some type of content filtering or not. It's not limited. It wouldn't be as tight. Generally, it's not as tight. They have more options to research at home than they would at school. So that's been the stance we've taken there on filtering. At Calvary, we have basically a content filter. We use iVoss, which is, I put as a suggested resource on your paper, but there are lots of other possibilities. But that's a content filtering. There are different levels. So the teachers, computers, for example, you know, they would filter, you know, your worst, kind of the worst setting, but then students would come down to a much more restrictive setting so that students, for example, cannot access social media, they cannot access electronic communication like email, no commerce, so those are some big categories that we rule out for the students. It does open it up. They can easily do research, and they use the computers for research on a regular basis. Maybe we'll just think about students here for a moment and internet usage. Do you have any questions or comments? Things that are working well in your school? Concerns that you have?
What is the white filter used for whitelisting at Pilgrim?
That is a good question. I actually don't have it. Wes, do you know what that is?
I can cite it.
There are different platforms available, I think. K9 is one that's free. And I think it works very well if you're going to K9 Protection. I have that listed, but that one's free and works well, particularly if you're whitelisting.
I'm currently using I use several different levels, but one thing that's good is I have just on the router, I have time restrictions. That way, you know, if someone would happen to be there after school, the internet access is off. Mm-hmm. I also use a DNS filter just because it's free and it's easy to set up. Then we use cleaninternet.com as our main filter.
Okay.
But that's why I asked about the whitelist, because we have an extension on the browser that whitelists, but you know, any student who's just a little bit tech savvy can get around that. But like you said, just like a Pilgrim, our computers are in the main area, so it's not that big of a concern.
Yeah, and you have the concern about students coming into the classroom off hours or over the summertime and those kinds of things. So, any other comments or questions? How many of you have some type of filtering on your internet? Okay. What about content filtering versus whitelisting? Do you have any comments about that? So whitelisting simply being that you are putting in the particular websites. You are allowing specific websites and only those websites. So connected to that question, I think, is do you want your students to be able to research online? If you want them to be able to research online, then it's difficult to have a whitelisted mailing
option
because it really tightens down the research possibility. Yes?
I know Compass Foundation has put a lot, or it has done a lot of filtering as well. And one of the things that is different about his filter is he does pruning. So you can look at Fox News, you get down to the bottom, and where there would normally be celebrity stuff, that's gone. Mm-hmm. If you're going through, it works pretty good. I know some schools that have switched to that.
So does it work somewhat like an ad blocker?
It's a little different than that.
Okay.
So it'll, but similar. Like if you're going through YouTube, it should clean out certain portions of it, but it's pretty expensive for personal use.
Okay.
But for school use, for businesses and so forth, it works pretty decent.
Does it need to run on a particular browser?
I don't think so.
Okay, but it's on the browser. You put it on the browser, or is it actually on the router or on the server?
You actually have to get a device.
Okay.
And it goes through, I'm not totally sure how it works. I see you have filtered your internet.com there, and I think on the business page there, I think we have a link to Compass Foundation, so you can find
it from there. All right. Is anybody connected directly with filteryourinternet.com? I actually know.
Okay. I'm actually the chairman on filteryourinternet.com,
okay.
But I don't. I'm not necessarily the technology gurus that run the website.
Yeah. Well, I was introduced to it by one of the teachers at our school, and I just thought it was. Thought it was interesting, and it looked like you have a valuable resource there. So I included that based on that. All right. Yes?
Question on research. Do we want our students to do all their research on the internet?
Good question. Do we want our students?
I've heard of an institution that only allows edu and org web rather than .coms.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's a good place to start to get to know where to go next.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly don't stop at Wikipedia.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe even don't start there.
I know as a parent, some of my son, he was required to get two resources other than the internet for his reports and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this past year I had high school students on a research project. And the requirements was they could have no internet sources. And the purpose was simply to get them into the resources that are there in physical books. And with today's, I guess, different projects where physical books are being put online, which is a wonderful resource, that does open it up a little bit than, let's say, 5-10 years ago, where things that were on the internet were a little more your .com stuff or college websites. Today, I think we have a little more options for credible research on the internet. We also have, you know, it's all grown exponentially, right? But we do have more options for credible research online than we would have at one point. And I also agree with your comment about a good starting place. So wiki sites, for example, one of the values of wiki sites is that they give a really, really long list of reference works that may have been used or that would be helpful for writing the article on the wiki site. So I've told my students, don't include a wiki site on any academic paper. I don't want to see it. Now you can access the wiki site, you can use that to get an idea of what you're talking about. But for academic purposes, I want something that's going to be in .org, .org, and .edu, or some database, or else, you know, obviously books and reference works that are printed are always a good possibility, too.
Is there some value in teaching students in today's world, what is credible information online?
Oh, certainly.
I mean, if you only allow them to use hard copy library stuff, I may not learn some of the skills. I feel like it's actually probably more important than ever now to teach them where to find credible information online.
Yeah, I think you're bringing up a great point. So actually leading them through the process of finding credible information on the internet. And you'd be surprised maybe you wouldn't be surprised, but you know, social media sites or places where people are finding information and they're simply not paying any attention to the source of the information, or even what are the criteria that go into deciding if this is credible or not. Well, you can look at the author, you can look at his background, his credentials, you can look at any biases that he may have as a researcher or as a publisher, you can check his grammar, you can look at the website. But one exercise I did with my students this past year is I pulled up a website which was completely quack. It's actually a book and a movie written about it, but it's a new age, just a very extreme form of new age type of teaching, where basically you imagine things and they happen, sort of thing. Pulled it up for them, had them critique it, and say, "Why don't you believe this?" Well, actually, I asked them first, "What do you think about this? Do you believe it?" But no, those kinds of exercises, I think, are very helpful. They're actually learning tools, because when they get out of school, if we have a tight box for them at school, if they get into any kind of context where they have access to this information, they're going to have to know how to sort through it. So if we help them do that, we've helped them. Good comment there. Any other comments? Books won't go away for a long time. So nobody wants to say never or always, right? But I think books definitely have a place, and we need to know how to use them. And it's also helpful to point out to students the advantages of books over screens. It's difficult to lay out 5 books on the table and have that sense of overview. If you can get 3 monitors, and that's helpful, but most students don't have access to that. Not only that, there's still a limitation there. To actually have a physical paper in hand is better in many ways, and to scroll notes beside it. And there's research out there showing that if you actually write down notes rather than typing it into a laptop, there's actually a better connection learning the material. So handing out tablets to all the students, for example, I don't really see a logic behind that, except that it makes the students happy. There's an entertainment factor, I think, that is a lot of the drawing force behind that. Any other comments on internet? Okay, so let's think about I had one comment about internet use for teachers. One of the things we do at Pilgrim is we encourage the teachers to have cover their eyes protection. That's in our church, I think that's probably the internet accountability and filtering software that's used most. And basically, it is a subscription plan type of thing, but it works on Android, it works on it works on smartphones, it also works on desktop. And so the accountability alongside the filtering is kind of where we're hoping our group moves in that direction. So that's what we encourage for our teachers. Are there any comments about that? What do you want your teachers to do in terms of that? Yes.
So in your school, do the teachers each have their own computer?
So at Pilgrim, the school does not provide computers at this point. I'll take it back. We have computers for the students to use, and then we have an office computer. The teachers can bring their own laptops. So at this point, that's how that's that's managed. So basically, we're encouraging them.
Encouraging them
to have some type of filtering software that they're using.
Yeah. Because from what I remember of our school, I believe the staff just use one of the general computers and everything set up with Windows Server and staff specific logins versus a student login.
Any other comments? Yes?
Any perspective on how this workshop will would be discussed 10 years from now?
That's an interesting question. Yeah. So are you thinking, like, what are some things about this that may continue to be discussed in the future?
Well,
what are some things that may be different?
That's right.
We'll probably be discussing virtual reality that is
So there'd be a question of what technology will be, you know, we'll be looking at that point. One comment is that I think some of the core virtues, some of the core issues will be the same. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have integrity, we have time management, we have basic education. What does it mean to educate? How do we transfer that? And a lot of that's going to stay the same. These conversations will continue to be the same, but there will certainly be different technology, I guess. Maybe somebody else has a comment.
Some of us may not know, or else have forgotten that the iPhone is less than 11 years old.
Right.
07, I think it is.
Mm-hmm. A lot has happened in my lifetime. Yes?
I think it changes the focus of parenting.
Mm-hmm.
And the issues are basically the same as they've always been.
Mm-hmm.
It's a matter of directing the attention by the families, which are really the parents.
Yeah, so you're saying directing the energy.
Well, the basic responsibility of integrity is starting
still
in the home with the parents, and I think if that follows through, it's the same tendencies of evil and good we've had all along.
Yeah. Thanks for bringing that up.
For more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit thedocforlearning.org.